from WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ballet superstar Wendy Whalen inspires a kind of rapture in dance critics and choreographers alike. When you see her move, you understand. The Kentucky-born dancer breaks the traditional mold of the ballerina. She looks more angular, more modern, somehow ethereal and incredibly strong. She left the New York City Ballet last fall after working with and inspiring some of the world's greatest choreographers. She's 47 now and still powerfully, beautifully dancing. And she's with us this hour on Point, the one and only Wendy Whalen. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you dream of being able to move like a great, great dancer? What's your question on how it's done, what it takes? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Wendy Whalen, until last October, principal dancer with the New York City Ballet. She joined as an apprentice in 1984 and had her farewell performance last fall. She's worked with many great choreographers, from Jerome Robbins to Alexei Rutmansky and Christopher Wheeldon. She's now touring with her independent project, Restless Creature, in which she performs four dance duets with young contemporary choreographers. You can see video of her dancing at our website, onpointradio.org. Critics write of her rapturous spirituality as a dancer. But Marina Harz also wrote in The New Yorker last fall that there's a kind of no-bull attitude to her dancing that cuts through the posturing and ornamentation that can sometimes be off-putting about ballet. Wendy Whalen in New York, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
You're the great dancer. Most of us are not, though I'm sure we will have wonderful dancers listening very, very closely in this hour. So I hope you'll kind of extend some courtesy to us. Do we laymen and women out here trying to understand how you do that? I've watched a bunch of video of you in the last day. I'm by no means a dance aficionado. I drove my daughter to dance for many years, but that's a different thing.
That's a great thing. My parents did the same.
It was absolutely great. Absolutely great. I hope you'll help us get into understanding how this works, what it takes to get up to that principal dancer height, and then that kind of creativity that you've engaged with so many great choreographers. Do you have to start? You started at 3 or 4. Do you have to begin that young to build the sense of dance and musculature to make it happen?
You do have to begin young while your body's still supple, while it's still growing. Maybe not 3, but a good age is probably around 7 or 8. But really any age. I just think that getting into a studio and getting into, you know, a group of people and playing music and getting your imagination charged, you know, at an early age is great for a burgeoning dancer, someone who wants to explore that territory. That's a great way to start.
Yeah, you did it, and you stuck with it through your teens, despite being diagnosed with scoliosis, that kind of curvature in the spine that left you in a large cast, sort of shoulder to hip or something like that.
Was that
your drive for dance, or was it your dance teachers who saw something in you, encouraged you to dance even through that challenge?
Oh, through that challenge, yes. My teachers were amazing in helping me see beyond the limitations that were being put on me. They thought I was doing really well. They didn't want me to lose my focus. And they just said, you know, why don't you just come in and do whatever you can do while you're in this cast? And, you know, you'll find new aspects of dance that you might not find with all the freedom of having your whole body with, you know, without the limitation. So that was the greatest gift, that they gave me that opportunity to try to, you know, look beyond the limitation, because I found so much else to explore and to learn from. And I came out much stronger than if I had just kind of said, oh, I'm limited. I'm going to stop and I'm going to take a break and let this, you know, get fixed. So it's really that kind of shaped my whole career, really, in not giving up and always looking at, you know, all the many doors I can take and all the challenges that lied right in front of my face and I could just dive into.
You were off to New York pretty young and engaged with the New York City Ballet. I want to look at what happened during those years because it's quite an incredible story. But take us to this end of that engagement. Last fall, October, you had your last performance there. When did you begin to think, it's time for me to move on to a new arena? You haven't stopped dancing at all. So it wasn't that you were finished dancing. There was something else going on. Can you share that with us, what it was?
It was a few things, actually. You know, I'm 47 now. It was about when I was 45, I guess. I was, you know, there was lots of upcoming talent, and the Balanchine roles are really geared toward young bodies. And I was really finding my place in the company as being in the studio with living choreographers making new work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I found I loved the most. And I wasn't in charge of that. And I, you know, was moving on from a lot of the Balanchine work. And I needed that opportunity to continue cultivating new work with choreographers in the studio. And I didn't have as much opportunity as I would have liked because, you know, we just didn't have that many incoming choreographers at the time. And I also had an injury in my hip, which was sort of a big shock and surprise. And it really was kind of debilitating for me. So that also pushed me out of more balletic roles and into more contemporary, more modern, more things that weren't so drastic and extreme and open and stretched and crossed over. So I kind of found found that opportunity with the limitations that I had. And I thought, let's take this door and let's see, you know, what's there for me. And so I started to create my own project for myself called Restless Creature.
Yeah, we'll look at that. You say you're not in charge of working with choreographers on new material,
no.
but when I read...
Not as a dancer in the company.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's true sort of organizationally.
Right.
But in the one-on-one relationships that you have had with these great choreographers, Christopher Wheeldon and more, when I read them talking about it, I'm not sure who's in charge. I mean, they're ultimately the choreographer, but you famously become a muse to so many. Can you take us into that relationship when you're working with a great choreographer who is sort of singularly focused on your motion, your body, your way with dance? What's the back and forth in coming up with a new dance?
Well, you know, the source of the project, piece is their idea, their choreography, their steps. They've chosen the music, and luckily, I've been able to be a part of many of those pieces with a lot of these great choreographers.
You've been the originating dancer in something like 30 or 40 new ballets, right?
I think so. Yeah, at least just with New York City Ballet.
Huge number, yes.
Yeah. So that was my real forte and my real love. But still at the same time I'm part of a group and I'm just one part of many. And, you know, a choreographer will hear a piece of music and they'll think, "Oh, that I hear Wendy in that music." And they'll invite me into the room and very often, you know, they'll make a piece and they don't hear me in it and I'm not in it, but it's really special when they do hear something that makes them think of me. And then we'll get into the studio and luckily I've developed great relationships with a lot of these, artists and we know each other. I know what they need. They know what I have to offer. And, I try to bring to the table whatever I can to give them the product that they would like. And very often it's a lot of fun to do that.
Does it feel like a co-creation to you as the originating dancer?
For me, I've been able to get to that place with these people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So that, I mean, and often they'll actually dance with you during the creation of the dance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm following behind them as they're making up a step and I'm trying to recreate what they're doing to the best of my ability. And very often I'll do it differently and they'll think, "Oh, that's what I want. I want what you're doing." And or, "No, you're not doing it the way I'm doing it." So it's a little bit of a back and forth. It's kind of a constant conversation. And I enjoy that a lot. I love that kind of interaction and sort of playful quality of the creative process.
You ditched your ballet shoes at some point in the last few years. Why did you do that?
I did. I've dancing ballet for, since I was three, mm-hmm. and I'm 47 now. I just really wanted to kind of start over. I felt like, I've gotten to this place and I want to feel young and new. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that was to try something different. And that was going to be, trying new kinds of dancing and new approaches to dance that I hadn't really done before or that I'd done very little of and was interested by and trying to find more of that for myself. And I also wanted to tap into my own artistry and kind of bring out new things within myself that I knew were there, but I couldn't really do that through the form of ballet. So I've been sort of focusing a little bit more on contemporary and modern work and modern and contemporary choreographers themselves and people that are living and making work right now and keeping that conversation alive and thriving for myself in the studio. So
it looks pretty amazing. Wendy Whelan, we're so glad you're with us. There's a lot we want to learn in this hour. Please stand by there in New York City. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with ballet superstar Wendy Whelan, longtime principal dancer at the New York City Ballet. She left last fall at 47, famed muse to some of the most celebrated choreographers in dance, talking about the art of dance, the inner life of the dancer. She's out on the road these days with a new series of dances, Restless Creature. She performs four dance duets with four contemporary choreographers. You can see some video of Wendy's dancing at our website, onpointradio.org. She joins us from New York City. Behind us, Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3. Wendy Whelan was in the original cast of Jerome Robbins' 1997 Brandenburg, set to the music of the Brandenburg Concertos. Wendy, there's a lot of attention paid to your body and the shape of your body. I said long in the introduction, but you're not actually that tall, but there's something long in the dimensions of it that have you described as, inspiring something like calligraphy in dance. What's the difference between your body and the sort of archetypal ballerina body, to your own interpretation?
I have very long arms. Mm-hmm. I have really long arms. I have a very defined musculature, mm-hmm. and I have a defined sort of skeleton. I have kind of, you can see all the bones and the muscles. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't explain it myself. It might not sound too attractive, but
boy, it's incredible to see, though. It does make your movement look more modern to my eye, and I'm no expert, there's something more lean in your presentation than I associate with that stereotypical shape.
I think it's very architectural, mm-hmm. And I think that the modern ballets of Balanchine, it feeds that kind of idea and the sort of lean, hungry look of certain Robbins pieces. And there's a certain otherworldly or alien quality. I've had a lot of different adjectives put about my body.
I'll go with fantastic. The musculature, it is really clear. And there are muscles, as you do moves that I have never even thought of doing, there are muscles that sort of show up that I didn't even know existed. Is that very defined musculature, is it by diet? Does it just come from your exercise regimen? Is it something in your genes?
It's in my genes. Yeah, I was kind of born with this physique. Yeah.
It's amazing.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's amazing and wonderful to watch. When you stand by for a second in New York, Gia Corliss joins us right now, dance editor for Time Out New York. She joins us also from New York. Gia, thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Gia, I'm reading in your work and many others this kind of rapturous description of Wendy Whalen and her presence on the dance stage. What is it about Wendy, you know dance much better than I, that made her such a singular figure in the New York City Ballet that took her to such heights of dance and co-creation of choreography?
Well, her physicality was always different from other dancers, but to me she's just a world of contradictions. It's strange to talk about you when you're right there. But she's wispy and she's delicate and she's thin, but she's so strong. And like you said, you can see her muscles working. And you can even see the careful way in which she organizes her body. So that kinetic control for me is really fascinating to watch. But I don't want to make her seem like she's a dry dancer.
Oh, you know, far from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in her early years, she was kind of, to me, she was a little bit punk rock. She was raw and wiry, and that was exciting to me. But, you know, as she transitioned, she became sort of softer and romantic. So she is a true modern ballerina, but capable of there are so many sides to her, and I think that's what's fascinating. She looks great in those modern ballets, but I always loved her in something like Balanchine's Theme and Variations, because that just requires dancing, and she can dance.
Wendy, when Gia talks about a transformation in your case, from the sort of punk rock raw to the softer and romantic, is that something you were aware of? Is there a point in your career that you'd point to when you pursued that, or it just happened? What?
I really felt this kind of flowering happen just as I aged, just naturally, as I matured. And I was, you know, as a younger dancer, I was kind of seeking out, what is it that's missing? What is the missing link that I don't understand yet? And I just always was seeking something, and I didn't know what it was. And as I was turning 30, I kind of found this new side of myself, and it was a more relaxed state, and a more, you know, like, I've earned this. And I now have something to say. And then that only kind of more developed over time. And so, yeah, I felt that whole thing, yeah.
Gia, did you write about that at the time? Were you watching at that time, Gia, when the transformation was taking place?
Oh, I'm sure I was writing at the time. I was watching. Yeah, I was watching and writing. And it was, I think it had to do a lot with Christopher Wheeldon coming in and choreographing ballets for you. He was showing her physicality in this way that no one had really done before. It was a continuation of Balanchine, but within these odd alien shapes, you could see this spirituality, and it was just kind of haunting. So she's the kind of dancer where time just suddenly stopped, you know, while you were watching the performance.
Yeah.
It made me really aware of live performance, of that power. Not every dancer can pull that off.
This word spirituality comes up in any number of reviews that I've read from over the years. Rapturous spirituality, incandescent spirituality. That is pretty high praise. I mean, that's talk about, you know, going from the feet on the floor to something very, very high. What do you think produces that, Gia?
I think that it has to do with stripping yourself away to the essence. Taking away anything that makes you, as a performer, perhaps nervous or you know, she has a real devotion to dance. And as the years went by, you could see that, because the layers stripped away, and you saw this purity. I don't know if I'm describing it well, but I feel like with great dancers that happens. You know, you get to the essence of the person. So we're watching her, right? Not
just
the role. We're watching Wendy. We're seeing Wendy.
Wendy, do you think of yourself, this comes up again and again, do you think of yourself as a spiritual person? Is it something in the motion that suggests the theater of spirituality, whether or not it's in you, or is this the naked you that emerges there?
You know, with any practice, when you've focused that much attention to something, especially when it comes to your body and your mind and your heart and music and dance and just those many hours, those years, those just that amount of devotion is like meditation, and it will take you to another place. And I think that that happened in my, has happened to me in my time as a dancer. And I, the way Gia says, it's like peeling away, you know, and finding your true essence. I feel like just over time of practice, I've been able to get to that place. And it's a place that as a child dancer, I didn't really knew existed. I just thought the beauty was this sort of superficial thing. And it was like, oh, I'm going to have a tiara one day. And, you know, but it's so much more deep and beautiful and holy, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't really know that existed. And it so it showed itself to me after all the work.
I suppose this can come up in many fields. I mean, it can come up for a dancer. It can come up for others. I want to bore in, if we can, on this for a second. You talked with Rosalind Silkus at the New York Times and about this time of transformation. You were looking back to maybe 2001, Polyphonia you did with Christopher Wheeldon. You said, I turned 30, started dancing with Jacques Soto and Chris Wheeldon, started making stuff for me. My world opened up. Then you said, I could feel my heart in dancing for the first time. And this struck me as something that maybe any person, any woman perhaps in particular, might really, just after all those years of being that strong girl in control, it took all those factors to go beyond that and find out who I was as a dancer, not some idea of what I should be, but me. That sounds almost like a universal opening to liberation there that you found in dance.
Definitely. But what the magic element, one of the other magic elements that is surely embroidered into all this is that I had a huge heartbreak at that same time. So I was really in touch with my soul and my heart. And, I, you know, it was just
a romantic breakup
working on this. Yeah. So all this stuff happened. And it just it was like breaking ground and letting a seed flower. And it was powerful and painful and just glorious and life-changing. So it just strangely all happened and coincided all at the same time. All these elements came together and just fed one another and became something I never imagined it could.
Gia, when you see Wendy on stage, is it clear to you why she's such a muse to so many choreographers, where she has been?
Well, I haven't watched choreographers work with her. So, but I can only imagine that it has to do with her imagination, right? And I think that's something that we've also seen develop, you know, on stage, is her rich imagination, you know, her ability to create a world for herself that we're able to watch, you know, from afar and imagine ourselves. But I think another really important choreographer for Wendy, along with Christopher Wheeldon, was Alexei Ratmansky.
Yes.
Who really drew out a sensual side of her. And in his ballets, she became the epitome of spirituality for me, sort of like an American dancer with a Russian soul. And that was really exciting to see.
You asked her in a wonderful interview in Time Out New York, you asked why her mentors or have always been men.
Men.
Wendy said, I don't know, I have no idea. But then
I
think
But then
she does have an idea. She said, because you also pointed out that women really respond to her on stage. Now, Wendy, I apologize for talking about you and your presence this way, but
that's
what we're doing. And there's this great response. Wendy said to you, I'm a real woman's woman. Also, strangely, at this time, she's 46, not 47. She said, there's a weird sexuality that's really strong and potent that I feel, and I want to put it out there. I feel that with a man, gay, straight, whatever, that thing comes alive.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be something I wanted to feel. So there's also that element that was really where I am in my life, gravitating to what I think I feel will feel good, the red dress men. Wendy, talk about that.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, this is powerful, right? This lights up so many parts of life, including creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel there's a certain sort of sensuality and in the creative process and in sexuality and sort of coming together and creating something, whether it's physical or emotional or artistic. I it's hard to put into words, but that's just how you make things.
I mean, Christopher Wheeldon, at one point, I read him talking about how he sort of working with you was sort of about falling in love with you or your dance or your body or the movement or all of the above, maybe?
I feel this exact same way for different choreographers that I work with and different partners that I dance with. It's just, there's just something that becomes electric and becomes exciting and bright and thrilling. And it's just, I don't know, it's a beautiful thing. It's really, really hard to put into words, honestly.
Gia, I know we have to lose you in just a second here. Talk about, for just a moment, Wendy's durability. Ethereal and spiritual and incandescent and all the rest, but she's going on 48 and she's very much at it. How unusual is that?
Well, I think it's unusual, but she has this great work ethic that, I mean, dancers, countless dancers talk to me about, and not just from New York City Ballet, but American Ballet Theatre too. I mean, I think for a long time, she's the soul of New York City Ballet because she, I think she showed people how to work and how to take care of themselves. You know, when you see someone who's danced for that long and is only getting better or richer as a ballerina or as a dancer. I mean, you know, she's going into new territory. She's going to discover new parts of her artistry, which is so exciting. But I don't think she'll ever stop working. I think that's class is what you do if you're a dancer. You take class every day. You stretch. You work. You eat well. You're healthy. You sleep. It's all of those boring things, but it's important.
Gia Corliss with Time Out New York, I really admire your work, and I'm so grateful you could join us for a minute today,
Gia. Thank you.
Gia Corliss, thank you so much. Wendy, can we take a call right here?
Sure.
Gregory, East Providence, Rhode Island, you're on the air with Wendy Whalen.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a longtime body worker, and I've worked with many athletes and many artists and many dancers.
Body worker, like a physical trainer kind of body work?
I do a kind of specialized form of soft tissue therapy called Rolfing.
Okay,
sure. I work with the fascia and the body and help people with their alignment and the repetitive stress and injuries. And I've worked with many dancers and many ballet dancers. And I'm very curious about how Wendy thinks about her conditioning, how being an athlete underlies being an artist and how her being expressing art requires her being an athlete, but it's also, she's not just an athlete, she's an artist. And how those two, it's the most athletic of all art expressions, being a dancer. And how she thinks about that. Is it athletic training just not even on her mind? She's just training all the time to express art? Or is it, you know, how those two pieces of her life
go together
throughout her career?
Gregory, I love this question. Wendy, we just have half a minute before the break, but dive in on it, begin, and maybe we'll come back to it. What do you say?
I'm just looking for balance, really. I'm looking for health in what I put in my body, what I read, what I watch on TV, how I present myself in the studio and work in the studio, just trying to be balanced in every way and as healthy and pure and clean and open as I can be.
As a dancer, do you consider yourself, this may be a weird question, but an athlete first or an artist first?
Oh, that's a great question. As a child, I thought I was sort of an athlete first. I came from an athletic family, and now, you know, I see them, they go together, but I'm a human being first, and I just want my body to feel great.
If you did a sport, what would it be?
Running.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Gregory in Rhode Island, thank you so much for that question. A lot more lined up for you, Wendy Whalen. It's such a privilege and pleasure to have you here. Ballet superstar, dance superstar, Wendy Whalen is with us. 30 years with the New York City Ballet, principal dancer there. She's moving on into new territory now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with ballet superstar Wendy Whalen, longtime principal dancer at the New York City Ballet. She left last fall at age 47, but she has by no means left dancing. She's doing her performance, Restless Creature, around the country on tour right now. Wendy Whalen joins us today from New York. We're talking about the sort of heart of the art of the dancer. You can see some pretty incredible videos of her dancing at our website, onpointradio.org. Neue Liebesleiter Walzer behind us here. Wendy Whalen danced in the 2009 revival of the 1960 ballet, set to this, by New York City Ballet co-founder and great choreographer George Balanchine. She's gone on to originate many, many dances. Wendy, lots of people responding online here. Jewel says, I'm so happy to be listening to a ballet star. Dance world, represent. She just fist up for dance there. AC's watching you in the videos online and says, I don't really understand dance, but there is something hypnotic and interesting in watching this, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And here's another listener, even more into it. Seeing her body's musculature in action is like seeing those marvelous representations of the old instruments that represent the movements of the planets and universe in the Smithsonian, like the magic of a Swiss watch, allowing one to feel the music of the spheres she makes more visible. I think that's true. I love that. That's great. Janet in Newark, Connecticut. Janet, you're on the air with Wendy Whalen.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
I am Wendy's number one fan.
Move over, girl.
Of New York City Ballet for years. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that Wendy is one of the kindest people I've ever had contact with. I would email her and let her know I'd be there in that the evening of the performance. And I'm lucky enough to have some front row seats. And she would always acknowledge me with her eyes.
Yeah.
And I told her once that I wanted her to put her shoes on sale, that she never put her shoes on sale, whereas the others did.
Is that a thing in ballet, selling your ballet shoes now and then? Okay.
Your old ballet shoes, you put them on sale so that you sign them.
The company will sell your shoes.
I see. All right. All right.
Yeah.
And sign them. Okay.
Yeah. And Wendy was kind enough to send me some that I absolutely cherish.
Oh,
that's wonderful,
Wendy,
Janet.
I don't know if you remember Janet.
Of course I do.
I still go and I will find you wherever you dance.
Thank you, Janet.
Janet, that's so sweet. Thank you very much. Wendy Whalen, the number one fans always show up.
I love it.
I wonder how much of that sense of the audience has informed your dance over the year. Who are you dancing for? Are you dancing for the choreographer? Are you dancing for the head of the New York City Ballet, if that's where you are? Or is it the audience? What's the combination?
It's always sort of a different thing. You know, sometimes I sort of choose different people to dance for on different nights, and it's always different. So whatever feeds sort of that need in me and or that what's going to get that thing stirred up within me to be the best I can be, I'll aim myself for that.
Take whatever is out there to grab onto. Lake Linden, Michigan, Donna's calling. Hi, Donna. You're on the air with Wendy.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Ms. Whalen. Thank you for taking my call. It was such a pleasure to speak with you. We are in the hinterlands of the beautiful Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I've been teaching ballet for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to report that I haven't had the pleasure of seeing you dance in person, although I've been a great admirer of New York City Ballet for many years. I hope to see your new work on the road. We're about 4 hours from Green Bay and about 5 hours from Duluth.
Be ready to drive, Donna.
Yes. Except the weather is a bit of a challenge now.
Yes.
Anyway, I also appreciate the way you've endeavored to keep dancing in a different way, as so many of us have had to, you know, as we age. I just underwent 6 weeks ago a total knee replacement, and I'm so looking forward to getting back into the classroom just to dance a little bit again. Mm-hmm. I have several young students, probably in the 14 to 16-year-old range, and I was wondering, what is the best advice that you would have to give people like young women like this to keep them from getting discouraged in our highly competitive field?
That's a great question. I think that 14 to 16, that age, range is really tough because we're developing in such different ways and at different rates. Mm-hmm. And we're always comparing ourselves to each other at that age. So if we can try to avoid that and try to look and see where we are at this moment and not compare ourselves with other people and sort of find what is special about me at this point right now and kind of focus a little bit on your own unique gifts. I think that kind of guides you more towards your destination or to the next level of where you want to go rather than constantly comparing yourself and or looking down at, you know, what are you missing? What are you lacking? But look at what you have. So
is the competition not destructive? I mean, Black Swan made such a hit years ago. And then, you know, to me, that was a foreign world. But like, oh, my God, is it really that fraught in there?
It can be if you allow it to be. If your mind will go in that direction, you're going to be in trouble. But if you can steer yourself in a really positive way and have a great support system of friends around you and make friends and not enemies and go into this world in a loving way, you'll bring that towards yourself and you'll build up, you know, kind of this great energy around you, I think. So
sounds good for any endeavor. Important. Debbie in Boston, you're on the air with Wendy Whalen. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a male ballet dancer. He's 17 going on 18. He's been dancing for only 2.5 years. He started out at Boston Ballet and was at the School of American Ballet this past summer.
Is this your son, Debbie?
This is my son.
Uh-huh, great.
Yep, training under Jacques Soto, long-term partner.
Yes.
I have a wonderful picture of you and my son, actually, which you were very kind to take with him. And he was very disappointed, you know, kind of going back to the last person's question, at not being invited to stay for the winter term. Jacques said that he needed to kind of build up his strength. So he's at the Central Pennsylvania Youth Ballet right now for 2 years. And he's training under Marcia Del Weary, who's, is very well-known ballet teacher. So he's doing very well. Next year, his plan, he's graduating high school this year. His plan, he'll be at CPYB next year, and then his plan is to audition for companies next year.
Debbie, what is your question?
My question is about, A, Wendy's perspective on male ballet dancers, and also this whole disappointment question, and, you know, he's going to be having to make a decision between becoming a professional dancer if he gets a contract and going to college. And as a parent, you know, that's a little bit difficult to, you know.
It's a tough juncture. What may I ask you exactly, what about male ballet dancers? There are plenty of them. Wendy's danced with many. What's the question there?
How different is it for a male ballet dancer versus a female ballet dancer? Obviously, there's many more female dancers. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit easier to get a position as a male dancer. So I just a general question on the perspective of male dancer and careers and that kind of thing.
We'll pick it up. Thank you, Debbie. Wendy, I guess first to male ballet dancers. You've worked with many. Do they have the same challenges? Our culture doesn't have quite as big an aperture for them, and yet they're absolutely essential to ballet. How do you look on that stream?
That's tough. I mean, not being a male dancer myself. I know, you know, there's always a need for male ballet dancers, and especially ones that can partner, really, truly. So that's, if he can partner, he'll always have a little bit of an edge. I just think that you have to go where the world and fate sends you and trust that it's sending you there for the right reasons and that it's, you know, you're going to find what you're going to find where it sends you. I don't think there's any shame. I wouldn't see there being, you know, any shame in not being asked for certain, you know, things that you're hoping for. Just saying, okay, well, what else is out there? Where else can I go? Where else can I try? What's next? And stay positive and not look at something as a failure. And noticing all the amazing dance programs in colleges and how many incredible dancers have come out of those university programs, gone on to become major forces in dance. Those are a lot of the people I'm working with right now are all college graduate dance artists and really, really inspiring people. So I don't...
There you go, Debbie. There's some good advice. Wendy, could you describe some of Restless Creature for us? We've got some video of it at the website, onpointradio.org, but give us a sense of these four duets that you're dancing and the themes.
Yeah, the themes. Well, I really was interested in dancing with the choreographer himself or herself. I ultimately chose four men choreographers. But I wanted to dance with the source of the choreography.
Are most choreographers and ballet dancers themselves? Is that common or uncommon?
Excuse me? Can you say that again?
Are most choreographers in ballet also dancers?
At a certain time, most were.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, especially in the ballet world, you know, sort of finish dancing and commit only to choreography after a certain point. You know, very often when they're very talented, they stop dancing when they're young to really focus on their ballet choreography. I chose these four contemporary male dancer choreographers, and many of them, two of them have their own companies that they've formed. One of them is a choreographer in residence at the Hubbard Street Dance. And actually, all three have their own companies. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth one is a resident choreographer. So they all still dance, and they all still make really, really interesting work. And they all have very developed, unique vocabularies. And I think I was drawn to them because I had met most of them, and they were really fun to be around. And young, vibrant, and open to my wanting to challenge myself. And I just thought that they would all be wonderful teachers to me. And that's kind of what I was looking for.
There's a point that Christopher Wheeldon talked with Rosalind Silkus about his relationship. And he said, this is the great choreographer. He said, what makes Wendy unique is that she has the inexplicable ability to make abstract movement take on a certain poetry through simplicity, a look, a breath, a sculpted shape, story always hovering in the air around her. Where does story come from in dance? Does the choreographer impart it? Does the dancer have to generate it? Are you thinking story when you're moving in dance?
No, not really. And most of the work I've done with the New York City Ballet, they don't tell us a story ever. But somehow along the way, I kind of learned that to figure out these abstract pieces, I wanted to, and I just naturally developed imagery in my own head and ideas for what things meant. And that was kind of a fun game for me to do. And then it kind of flowered and blossomed more and more, and it became sort of a tool that I used. And I continue to use it. And I just think that that's played a really interesting way for my creative process and my collaborations.
Do you share that with a dance partner? What
not
you're
usually
visualizing, or that's
no,
your private reference
private,
point?
It's a private thing generally, unless I want to try to make sure that we're on the same page and that we might, you know, want to have a similar idea at certain points in the work. And if I'm teaching a piece to somebody or handing down something, I kind of offer them my ideas, but always tell them to come up with their own. So I think dance has to be very personal to the dancer themselves, and then also to the viewer. It's always a personal thing. Most dance doesn't mean anything. It's up to you to find something within yourself that this dance mirrors, and something that will reflect back to you. And I just think it's a really personal experience.
Are you tempted
dancing and watching?
Yeah. Are you tempted to choreograph yourself to focus on that at any point? No. Dance.
Yeah.
I mean, you've come pretty close to that, I guess, in the way you've inspired people. But
I like to be the painter's brush. I don't want to really add the stroke. I just want to sort of help make the shape. Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful to talk with you. We hope you keep dancing for a long time. I'd love to catch you on your tour. I'm sure many others feel the same. It's just great that you're out there with all this experience and dance still in you, sharing it with us. We're grateful for being able to talk about it today, Wendy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tom.
Wendy Whalen, former principal dancer with the New York City Ballet. She's touring right now with Restless Creature. She performs four dance duets with four contemporary choreographers. You can see video of Wendy dancing at our website, onpointradio.com. www.tonyandcompose.org. Behind us here, Fortes for violin, strings, and percussion, Estonian composer Arvo Pärt composed. Christopher Wheeldon used it for his 2003 ballet Liturgy. Wendy danced in the ballet's 2003 premiere with longtime dance partner Jacques Soto. What a treat to have her with us today. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, and James Ross, with help from Araz Haban and Caitlin O'Keefe. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.